Hello, this is Joe Cottonwood, reading from my novel, Four Dog Riot.
In September 1998, Menlo Park, just south of the Golden Gate.
This is episode one, Wednesday, September 9th, 1998, 9:14 a.m. Bowie Brown took a seat on the hard wooden chair. He wiggled. No matter where he put his butt, there was no comfortable position. His body never fit anything anymore. Clothes, furniture, classrooms. The chair was probably designed by a maniac anyway. Some madman who thought it was a crime to slouch. And in the vice principal's office, where Bowie was sitting, slouching probably was a crime. So he sat straight. In a soft and padded swivel chair, Mr. Lipinski rocked backwards and stared. Bowie knew better than to speak before the vice principal said something first. Lipinski had thin lips, always pressed together, so that he seemed to have no lips at all. Nobody had ever, not even once, seen lipless Lipinski smile. You better not laugh when he's talking to you. You better cop a serious and sorrowful attitude if you want to get out of that office without a suspension. Someday, some kid is going to bring a gun to school, point it at the vice principal, and say, "Smile, lipless. Smile or die." Lipinski drummed his fingers on the desktop. Finally, he spoke.
"Why don't you tell me what happened, Bowie?"
"She said I was disruptive."
"Who?"
"Platley."
"Mrs. Platley."
"Sorry, Mrs. Platley."
Bowie crossed his legs, then immediately uncrossed them. Sometimes he had more body than he knew what to do with. 6'3" tall, 8th grade, taller than Lipinski, taller than his teachers. Sometimes he wished he could hide.
"You were disruptive, Bowie. What were you doing?"
"Playing guitar."
"You had a guitar in class?"
"Air guitar."
Lipinski frowned.
"Why, Bowie?"
"She was talking."
"Of course Mrs. Platley was talking. She's a teacher. Isn't she supposed to talk?"
"But it's English. She just talks."
"Bowie, listen."
Lipinski leaned forward, elbows on the desk, his mouth a thin line.
"Already this year, you've had 3 incidents. On the first day of school, you broke a kid's collarbone."
"I didn't break it. What happened was, when he hit the bleachers, it broke. The bleachers broke his collarbone."
"He hit the bleachers because you threw him there."
"I didn't throw him there. I just kind of pushed him after he called me Boogie Lips."
"And we have a zero tolerance policy for any racial remarks."
"So do I. I have zero tolerance for skinheads."
"You could have reported it, Bowie. You didn't have to break his collarbone."
"I didn't break it. The bleachers broke it."
"Bowie, stop. I don't want to debate that unfortunate incident. I'm talking about now. It's only September, a long way to June. This week, it's disrupting class. Last week, it was sexual harassment. You can't..."
"I didn't harass Mimi Bucher. It was an accident."
"You touched her in a private place."
"Her butt. My hand accidentally brushed against Mimi Bucher's butt when I was reaching back to get..."
"We can't allow that kind of accident among students in..."
"I wouldn't want to touch her. She's bought.
She's what?
Bought. She buys it.
Buys what?
Everything. Labels. Names.
What are you talking about, Bowie?
She wears names on her clothes.
Everybody wears names on their clothes. I wear names.
You're bought.
Okay, I'm bought. Whatever. What does this have to do with sexual harassment?
Nothing. The Buke, Bowie called her. Mimi the Buke. How come you believe Mimi Buker and you don't believe me?
I have no reason not to believe her. She never stole a car.
They told you that? They told you I stole a car?
It's in your record, Bowie. They sent your record from Maryland. You don't escape your record just because you move across the country.
I never stole. You don't steal something if it belongs to your family. I borrowed the family car.
And your father called the Maryland State Police.
He's not my father.
Okay, your stepfather. Whatever. Your family called the police.
He's not my family. I told you, he's my stepfather.
Okay, your stepfather isn't your family. Then you didn't borrow the family car. You stole that man's car. And by the way, you were 13 years old. It was illegal for you to drive any car.
Don't lawyer me.
I'm not lawyering you. I'm just telling you. You got your wish. You're in California now, and you live with your actual father. The car, stolen, borrowed, whatever, that's history. Same with sexual harassment. You did the crime, you paid the time. I don't want to punish you for air guitar. I just want you to get the message. You can't be disruptive in class.
I wasn't making any noise.
Will you stop?
Yeah.
Bowie, there's a world of opportunity waiting for you. This is 1998, for Pete's sake. It's almost a new millennium. People right here are inventing stuff like, you know, internet working stuff, making fortunes. Stay out of trouble, and you might be one of them.
Again, Lipinski was drumming his fingers.
I worry about you, Bowie. You're new here, and you're, shall we say, you're not fitting in. Have you made any friends?
No.
Then I'm going to give you an assignment. This is your homework. I want you to make a friend, okay?
Okay.
All right. You can go.
Lipinski started to write out a hall pass. Bowie smiled with relief. Lipinski looked up.
What's so funny?
Nothing.
You think this is funny?
No.
Would you think one day of suspension is funny?
No.
Well, you've got it. One day to think about it.
But you just said...
We cannot tolerate this kind of behavior, Bowie. We will not allow you or any other gangster to be a threat to the safety of this school.
So, there it was. Bowie clamped his jaw, lipless, like Lipinski, determined not to say another word which would only be used against him. He was, shall we say, not fitting in. How do you fit in when you stand out? A gangster! A threat to the safety of this school. Big Bowie. Big Black Bowie. In a world of white.
In September 1998, Menlo Park, just south of the Golden Gate. Talking on payphones, internet's gonna be great.
Hoot spoke without thinking.
I collect waterfalls.
Immediately, Hoot was sorry he'd said it. In the front row of lab tables, Mimi Bucher was snickering. At the rear of the classroom, tilted back on a stool with his back against the wall, Ivan Gold was scowling. Waterfalls? What kind of idiot collects waterfalls? No wonder I can't make friends, Hoot told himself. Every time I open my mouth, people find out I'm a quirk.
That's unusual, Mr. Bullhack said, leaning with one arm against the blackboard. How do you collect a waterfall, Mr. Howard?
He keeps it in his bathtub,
Mimi Bucher said, giggling. Mr. Bullhack waggled a finger at Mimi Bucher to silence her, though he didn't seem annoyed by her interruption. No teacher ever was annoyed at Mimi Bucher, and hundreds of students wanted to be her friend. She had everything a girl needed for popularity in eighth grade. Cool clothes, wide smile, real breasts.
I hike,
Hoot said.
I like to hike. I hike to the waterfall, and then I draw it.
So you have a collection of drawings of waterfalls? Mr. Bullhack asked.
Yes.
Could you bring them to school tomorrow? I'd like to see them.
Okay.
Ivan Gold snorted. Ivan had the faint remains of a black eye, fading. A week ago it had been blue, red, purple, a whole palette of color. Now Bullhack seemed annoyed.
And what about you, Mr. Gold? Do you have a collection or a hobby of some kind that's related to biology?
Sure.
Ivan pushed forward from the wall. The two front legs of the stool hit the floor with a clomp. Ivan had been held back a grade. Twice.
What is it, Mr. Gold?
Earthworms.
You collect worms?
No.
You raise worms? You fish with worms?
No. I hold one in my hand, like this, and then I light a match and hold it in my other hand, like this. I hold the worm over the match, like this.
Is this an experiment, Mr. Gold?
No, it's just fun.
What's fun about torturing worms?
Ivan shrugged.
It just is.
Hoot heard a sob. At the table next to his, he saw that Jazz was agitated, twisting on her stool. Little Jasmine McGuire, the Asian girl with the Irish name. A tear raced down her cheek. Suddenly, she leaped off her stool and shouted,
"You are dirt, Ivan Gold. You are what comes out at the end of a worm. You are the dirt that even a worm can't digest. An earthworm has a soul, just like you and me. Just like me, anyway, because you don't have one. You have nothing. You are worm excrement."
Then she ran from the room. Jazz was excitable that way.
I'm what?
Ivan said to no one in particular. Mimi Bucher smiled sweetly.
She called you a worm turd.
Ivan scowled, scrunching his fading shiner. Mimi tossed back her hair and met Ivan's glare with one of her own.
Hoot was fascinated. Whatever was going on between Mimi and Ivan, it wasn't about worms.
Grum!
Bullhack cleared his throat. Mimi Bucher turned to face the teacher, again smiling sweetly, in a challenge. Reprimand me, Bullhack. I dare you. Mr. Bullhack twitched his cheek and glanced at the clock on the wall. 23 pairs of eyes followed his. Would this class ever end? Again he grummed, and then began passing out worksheets as he said,
"Today is a lab day."
No reprimand, of course. When you're as cute as the Buke, you can say turd in biology. You can say just about anything at all.
Ford
Later that afternoon, Jazz pulled on Hoot's sleeve as they were passing in the hall and said,
"That's great that you collect waterfalls."
Most of the girls were taller than Hoot, but not little Jasmine McGuire. Size matters in eighth grade. Hoot was always keenly aware of how short he was. But Jazz was even shorter. She had braces on her teeth. Her rich black hair hung almost to her waist, gathered in two simple braids. Jazz said,
"I'm starting a collection, too."
"Worm excrement?"
"No."
Jazz grinned, a mouthful of metal, little strings of saliva stretching between the silver bands.
"Nebulae."
What?
"Nebulae. You know, in the sky."
"Like big clouds of dust in outer space?"
"Right. Dust, gas, stars, all together, nebulae."
And then she ran to class, pigtails swinging, banging behind.
"A four-dog riot, who's gonna buy it? Big change blowing, nobody knowing. Four-dog riot, better stay quiet, try to act normal, keep it informal."
Alone, as always, Bowie walked home playing air guitar, a special model of air guitar that could instantly convert into an AK-47 semi-automatic rifle. He'd play three chords, blah, blah, blom, and then he'd shoot out the tires of a Mercedes, chuck, chuck, chuck. All the houses in this neighborhood were for wealthy snots, big estates with broad yards, fancy gardens, classy cars. Bowie shot only at the luxury cars. The gardener's pickup, the house cleaner's old station wagon, the handyman's van. They got a free pass. Bowie played a final encore, blom, blom, blah, blom, blom, and turned up the driveway of one of the big estates. Two poodles ran up to greet him, wagging their little tail stubs, then dashing away again to their pillows on the front porch of the gigantic mansion. Bowie strolled farther down the driveway, shot out the tires of the two BMWs, chuck, 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 and then let himself into the caretaker's shack where his father lived. Bowie had recently moved in with his father after a few problems back in Maryland with his mother and his stepfather, who Bowie called the Step MF. The last problem being that Bowie had borrowed the Step MF's brand new Land Rover and tried to drive it to California. Unfortunately, Bowie had run out of gas in Gaithersburg. He just wanted to see the real world, that's all. So after a lot of ugly screaming about attitude, about stealing, but talk about attitude, it was the Step MF who was always in Bowie's face. Well, anyway, they sent Bowie to live with his dad in California, where, it turned out, the world didn't seem too real either. At least, not in this ritzy-titsy neighborhood. There was no pickup truck outside the caretaker's shack. His father wasn't home yet. Bowie went straight to the closet. From behind the mud boots, the stack of paint cans, the broom and mop and rusty old .22 rifle, Bowie lifted the guitar case and opened the lid. For a music machine, it didn't look like much. It was so old, it didn't even have a pick guard. His father's playing had worn a rough semicircle through the varnish below the strings, so that it looked like a rat had been chewing on it. But it sounded nice. Confident somehow, like it was so old, it didn't have to prove itself. Inside the body it said, C.F. Martin and Company, Nazareth, P.A. Nazareth. That was where Jesus grew up. Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus' father, what was his name? Joseph, yeah. Joseph was a carpenter, right?
Maybe Joseph built this guitar. It looked old enough, anyway. Bowie's father was a carpenter, too. Lefty Brown, left-handed carpenter and right-handed guitar player. Lefty was a little strange about that old Martin. He kept it hidden in the back of the closet as if it was some piece of junk he never used anymore. Then, some days, instead of going to work, he'd bring out the guitar and sit all day in the kitchen, bending notes. Blues style. Plucking and strumming and singing so softly, Bowie couldn't make out the words. Other times, nights, Bowie would wake up and hear his father picking and moaning, sometimes all the way until dawn. Not just singing, but singing to somebody. To a memory, maybe. A ghost. Scratched in script through the varnish on the back of the guitar, somebody had written, Jimmy. Weren't you supposed to name your axe for a girl? B.B. King played Lucille. Way up inside the body, if you held your eye to the sound hole and tilted so the light went in, more writing was visible, stamped into the neck block, the dovetail part where it fit inside the body. 000-45. That was the model. Martin 0045. The neck was short. Only 12 frets. Every other guitar Bowie ever saw had 14 frets above the body. But then, every other guitar Bowie had ever touched didn't sound as nice as this one. Sitting on the bed, Bowie picked out tunes. He'd never had a lesson. Right now, he was working on something by a different Jim. Purple Haze. If Jimi Hendrix went acoustic, Bowie liked to think, he might have sounded like this. Played Jimi the Hendrix on Jimi the guitar until Bowie's fingers got sore. One night, soon after Bowie had first arrived, he'd slipped out of bed and tiptoed to the kitchen to listen to his father playing Jimi. Lefty hadn't seen him at first. Bent over the guitar, sort of muttering words, testing notes, stopping, picking again. He was making up a song. Bells guards. Bowie was sure his father was making up a song, but still Bowie asked, What are you doing? His father looked up, annoyed.
Dorning.
I heard you playing.
Just testing.
What are you mad about?
I'm not mad.
Can I try it? Play it?
Sure, man.
Lefty gripped the guitar tightly to his chest, narrowed his eyes, and studied Bowie from top to bottom. The words said yes, but the body said no. Bowie reached out for the guitar. His father still held it against his chest. Bowie asked, "What's the problem?"
"It's okay, man. I'm just a little worried about you messing it up."
"Messing it up? It's already a wreck."
"See? That shows what all you know."
"How much did you pay for that thing?"
"It was a long time ago."
"How much?"
"I didn't pay. I traded a 65 Mustang with a bad tranny."
"So it's worth a broken car."
"That's right, exactly."
Lefty slammed the guitar back into its case. "What are you so mad about?"
"I'm not mad."
"Look, never mind. I don't want to play the guitar."
"It's okay if you want to."
"I don't." So Bowie had gone back to bed, and his father had gone into a mood and wouldn't talk the next morning. Bowie hated those moods. Ever since that night, whenever he heard his father picking, plucking, softly singing to the ghost in the kitchen, he pretended it never happened, even when Bowie knew Lefty had stayed up strumming all night. And when Bowie got a chance to be alone and play the guitar himself, and he played it a lot, he never said a word to his father.
Breaking away from his memories, back in the present, Bowie carefully returned the Martin to the case to the closet, tucking it behind the boots and paint cans, the broom and mop and rifle, so it looked as if he'd never touched it. No sooner was the guitar back in the closet than Bowie heard the wheezing of the pickup as it rattled to a stop. He went outside. Seeing his father unloading scraps of lumber, Bowie, without a word, started to help. When the scraps were stacked in a pile, his father said,
"Thanks, man. What kind of trouble are you in now?"
"Aw, Pop.
When you help without me even asking, you got trouble, man. What happened?"
"Suspended. For one day."
"Hmm. Why, man?"
"Smiling at Lipinski."
"They don't suspend you for smiling."
"With Lipinski, they do. They said I was disrupting class. They're scared of me." His father was a big man, bigger than Bowie. Now Lefty was rubbing his chin, thinking, as he said,
"Sometimes, man, I'm scared of you, too. Scared you'll do something really stupid."
"I won't." "He gave me homework, Lipinski. He said I have to make a friend."
"You done it yet?"
"No."
"You got anybody in mind, Bowie?"
"No. They're all bought."
"If they're bought, it's because you're buying it. All you think about is how much money they have."
"Well, still, they have it. They think this is the real world. Real life."
"They're people, Bowie. To them it's real. They have bigger houses, better clothes. They're human beings, man. What do you think is real life? Gangsters?"
Bowie shrugged. "Not gangsters. They were bought too. Everybody bought." Bowie kept it to himself because he knew it would sound stupid, but here it is. Real life isn't something you buy. Real life is tough and has a funky smell.
"You can do it, man. Make a friend. We could use a few."
Lefty stretched his arms back, making a circular shrugging motion, trying to loosen his shoulder and warm it up from an old injury.
"You know what? Maybe I'll make one, too. We can both do your homework."
That's the end of this episode. This is Joe Cottonwood. Assisting with the reading are the voices of Susan Walker, Carolyn Graham, Patrick Bradley, and Michael Menard. The music is by Will Fort.
In September 1998, Menlo Park, just south of the Golden Gate. Talking on payphones, internet's gonna be great. Afford a riot. Who's gonna buy it? Big change going, nobody knowing. Poor dog riot, better stay quiet. Try to act normal, keep it in.